Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder. So today, Mark and I, we are talking about how our non-theist pagan practices meet our politics, and we especially wanted to cover this given the current events and the many kind of discouraging things that are happening in the world. And what do we think about all of that? And then also, how do we handle that in our own lives and as pagans? So welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Welcome, Yucca. It's good to be back talking with you again. Yes, I think this is a really timely subject. Because obviously some very terrible things are happening in the world right now. And the murder of George Floyd has really upset me. And I feel really churning right now with anger and sorrow and bitterness and a feeling of helplessness. And it's a terrible combination. And I certainly feel like I'm not able to ignore that to talk about anything else today.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we're addressing, you know, the question of non-theist paganism and its nexus with politics. So where shall we start?
Well, I think that our first question really is non-theistic paganism political?
Would you like to speak to that first, or shall I?
Ooh. Well, I mean, I think that the first thing to address is what is political? You know, what counts as politics? Do you want to speak to that a little bit, what your view is on it?
Sure. What I consider politics is very broad. It means, how do I want the world to change to be more consistent with my value set? And that goes to everything from what kinds of people do I want in decision-making positions, to what kinds of laws would I like them to put into place, to what kind of governmental structures would I like for us to have and programs to have in order to support people and protect the environment and all of those important pieces, as well as to what kind of economic structures would I, in my, you know, in my dream, would we be living under? And so to me, I mean, I'm a very political person, and I think that it has always been consistent with my paganism that I have this aspirational sense in my paganism that I really want it to help make the world a better place and to help make me a better person in terms of how I interact with others and with the planet. So that's how I look at it.
For me, I think, you know, when I hear politics or political, that it really comes down to how we behave as group, right? Whatever level that group is, whether that's, you know, family politics or local politics, national. So looking at different groups and the choices that those groups make and how we're going to treat each other. And that can be things, again, like the family politics, or as large as things like structural racism or choices that we make in terms of how we spend money, right? Bills in terms of what laws do we make, all of that. And I think that really kind of flows back into what you were saying in terms of the different types of politics and things that we can do with that. So my values in terms of how I think we should, you know, using the should word, behave towards each other is very much influenced by my views as a pagan as well. I think it's sometimes very hard to try and tease out, you know, which is which and how separate those things really are.
So to speak.
Yeah. Are they or are they not? Or, you know. So I think that for me it is very political. But I do want to mention that we're speaking about our own views, and at least for me, I'm not claiming that all non-theist pagans necessarily are going to share the particular values or views that I have.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Although they should.
Well, I think so. You know, well, I do very much believe that it's important to me to not force those beliefs on people, but obviously I think that they're good beliefs because those are the ones that I have, right?
Yes, of course. Of course.
So yeah.
You know, when I think about paganism in the context of advocacy, of activism, you know, which is sort of the implementation of politics, right? The organizing of people and the creation of pressure on institutions of power in order to bring them more into alignment with a set of values. Mm-hmm. The thing that strikes me right away is that paganism itself has always been transgressive. Mm-hmm. It is, I mean, many pagans call themselves witches, and they do that deliberately. You know, this is a word that has been, you know, very negatively characterized in the culture, the over culture that we live in. And yet they own this word and they say, this is a word of power. It's a word that describes my independence from that over culture. And I really believe that by choosing not to subscribe to the institutional religions of the over culture, by choosing, other values that are more life-affirming and more earth-revering and more egalitarian and more inclusive, that we are deliberately making a choice simply by being pagans of any stripe, mm-hmm. honestly, not just non-theist pagans.
Sure.
To stand for something that is inherently political in nature. I really believe that. That said, I mean, I worked in politics for more than 10 years. I was the executive director of a political organization and did lots of grassroots organizing and lots of elected official lobbying and working on political campaigns. So my lens may be a bit biased in that regard. Mm. So I think that's fair to say.
You know, I think I really do agree with you, though, on that simply the choice of being pagan in itself is quite a political choice. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, if you want to go along to get along and you don't want to rock the boat, the last thing you do is declare yourself using labels that the mainstream religion finds really abhorrent. Yeah. It's just,
that is synonymous with bad.
Yes. Right? That's not the way to proceed. It's just not very helpful.
Yeah.
So I guess where this leads us to then is how do our political values then translate into or integrate with our pagan practice? And there are a lot of different dimensions of that. From my standpoint, and those come down to everything from my own personal rituals that I do with myself in order to work to be centered and grounded and kind, mm-hmm. as much as possible, because the rage that I can feel at injustice and mm-hmm. murder for no goddamn reason can inspire me to not want to be very kind, to not want to be, to not want to be simply assertive in saying, this is wrong, it has to change, I'm going to advocate for that change, but to go over the top in terms of, you know, just wanting to punch cops. And so my own rituals are able to kind of keep me more in balance with what my own values are, my own articulated values. Mm-hmm. In the Ethiopagan principles, which we talked about in our values issue, the last principle, number 13, is kindness and compassion. And it says, we practice kindness and compassion, including with ourselves, understanding that we won't always meet these principles that we claim as our own. Mm-hmm. And I feel that that's a very important point, because all of us are aspiring, right? We're aspiring to the values that we hope to stand for. Mm-hmm. We don't fully embody them. We're human and we're fallible. But I find that my pagan practice helps me to become more the idealized person that I want to be in relation to those values. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And so in this case, when you're referring to your practice, you're referring to the specific practices?
Or yes.
To your overall understanding?
Well, I guess I'd say both. Mm-hmm. Part of it is, you know, being an earth-revering, science-based pagan, one of the things that tends to give you is the long view. Because nature works in much longer time frames than human beings do. And so it makes it more possible to not just fall into kind of incoherent fury at the immediate, and instead to really focus my efforts on how am I going to get these values into the next generation? How am I going to give them more traction in the society that I live in? And I feel that in most cases, that's the most productive strategic approach is, you know, to have that methodical pushing of the ball forward in order to make things better. In times like these, I mean, I have absolute sympathy with protesters who are protesting right now. Mm-hmm. And it's what needs to be done. I personally have not seen a lot of good come out of much street protest. But in this case, I believe it absolutely has done good. I don't believe that the officer would have been arrested if not for protest.
Yeah.
And when I think about the horror that is visited on people of color in our society on a daily basis, I can't help but think that these protests are still pretty mild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if I were in that position, there would be a very loud voice in my head saying, burn it all down. Just burn it all down. Mm-hmm. And I am privileged not to have that experience. But I certainly can't, you know, sit in my privilege and say, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't be destroying property because that's counterproductive. That's obnoxious.
Yeah.
It makes no sense at all.
And doesn't help the situation. And right, yeah.
No, I mean, criticizing people of color for how they choose to protest, especially in the wake of Colin Kaepernick and LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and, you know, all those people who, you know, did all the things to protest. And Louisville and Ferguson. I mean, all the people who did all of the things to protest in a peaceful kind of way. And what they got were, you know, rubber bullets and truncheons and tear gas and and more violence.
Mm-hmm. And being mocked on a larger level as well.
Yes.
In terms of the cultural, not just the immediate violent response towards them, but how did the larger society respond?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Just talking about this, I start stammering. I am so, I grew up learning a myth about this country, and I never really believed it because I knew, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the civil rights movement and the murders of the Kennedys, or one of them anyway, and Martin Luther King, and the Kent State murders. And so I knew that something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the piece that I always clung to was that it seemed that the culture was aspirational, that it was trying to be better, even if it was, rooted in genocide of Native people and slavery and all these horrible, horrible historical transgressions, which still continue today in various guises. I believed that the country was trying to become better. When Barack Obama was elected, I thought, this is an indicator. We're trying to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid right now I don't believe that anymore. I don't see this country trying to become a better place. And it just fills me with sadness. So I do believe that my paganism calls on me to be an activist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not nearly as involved at the local level as I once was, because I was working 60 hours a week doing politics and nothing but politics for 10 years. I was the executive director of the largest environmental organization in my county. And so that's what we were about.
Yeah.
I consider my activism now to be more along the lines of trying to get the values of the Atheopagan principles into the culture and to help that movement to get its feet up underneath it so that if I'm removed from the equation, it still continues to move forward and supports its community members and provides resources and speaks on behalf of people who share those values on issues of concern.
Mm-hmm.
But of course I vote. I vote and I donate to candidates and I write letters and, I do all that stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? How do your political values integrate with your pagan practice?
Mm. Well, in the present moment, especially this week and the last few weeks, one of the places that I'm really at is really grappling with how to take some of the grief and the rage and to not try to suppress that, to not try to get rid of it, but how do I take that and use it as a way of to energize action, to do things that can be helpful in a way that is moving out and not just building my own island, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's one of the things that I do really believe, that one of the places we have a lot of power is in how we structure our own lives and the choices that we make on, consumer levels and on what systems of power are we giving power to, buying into, quite literally. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we have so much power in those choices, and that's somewhere where I often focus. And I think that with the particular stage of life that I'm in, that's very appropriate. But in other times like this, I also feel like it doesn't feel like enough that is important, but it also, I look for, and I'm still investigating ways to be able to affect change on a different scale or different level as well. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, it's still a lot of question. You know, there's still a lot of investigation, and I don't feel like I've got answers. And I'm definitely searching for those answers. But in the meantime, returning to daily rituals has really helped in terms of just being able to process and to try and deal with that. And like you were speaking about kindness, and not just kindness, but also being able to step back and have some mental clarity around what I'm thinking and feeling as well, and see where my choices and decisions coming from. Mm-hmm. And not to say that strong emotions should not inform choices, but that I want to understand if that's what I'm, that there should be, I'd like to have choice in that.
Certainly. Right. Certainly. And also as a parent, I mean, you're kind of, I mean, your kids are probably too young to be aware of what's going on in the broader world, but still.
The oldest is starting to get a little bit, but very, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Very little, yeah.
Yeah, I first became aware of politics in 1968, which was a hell of a year. you know, with riots at the Democratic National Convention and the murders of RFK and Martin Luther King and the Tet Offensive that really turned the tide of the Vietnam War, and just a huge number of things that happened. And I became aware that every Tuesday and Thursday night there were body counts on the evening news, that they were somewhere far away and they were being killed. And that really sort of got me started with being aware of the world of public affairs. Mm. But I do think that even at this stage with your kids, just modeling how to deal with big emotion, mm-hmm. is an important thing.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, and it's a, it's not like they're really going to get it until they're adults, if they're lucky, but it helps to start early to be aware that there are techniques that you can use, and that there are things you can do to take a sort of incoherent rage or outrage and turn it into something that can be focused and effective and not just venting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which isn't to say that there isn't a place for venting, because...
Oh, I think there's a very important place. Yeah.
There is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely there is. So I know that in the broader pagan community, there are quite a number of people in various like Facebook groups that I'm on and so forth who resist anything political. Well, I'm not political. That's not my thing. You know, I'm spiritual. I'm not political. And to me, that is an expression of a tremendous amount of denial and privilege. You know, if you're not privileged, you don't have the luxury of being non-political, mm-hmm. because politics is life and death to you.
Yeah.
You know, for gay folks, they don't have the luxury of not being political, because there are people in this country that want to exterminate them, and they have to be vigilant and active in order to prevent that from happening.
Personally, I don't believe that you can not be political. The choice to, like you're saying, the choice to avoid that is in itself a political choice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that I really appreciate about being a science-based non-theist pagan is that I don't have any way of rationalizing that some gods or some cosmic plan or some magical forces are going to make this all work out.
Mm-hmm.
The responsibility sits squarely in my lap and in the lap of my, you know, fellow people, to make something good happen if it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, I mean, on the one hand, that's daunting because it feels like a weight, but it also just feels so much more responsible and adult and focused and all that.
And empowering on some ways, right?
That, yes.
Both kind of like that sensation when you look at the night sky, and on the one hand, it can feel terrifying because of how tiny we are. And on the other hand, just awe-inspiring of what this incredible universe is that we're part of.
Yes.
There's two very extremes at the same time.
Yes.
That reminds me a little of what you're saying there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very much so. It's that holding of paradox.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that we have to be able to do as humans is to live with paradox. Because it's here all over the place. We have ironic juxtapositions of things that clash with one another everywhere. It's just part of the human condition. So did we have another question that we were going to address?
Well, we were actually going to talk a little bit about ways that we can work on ourselves during time periods like this, and ways to be able to be present in the ways that we would like to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of that in terms of my personal practices and rituals for me is about understanding the mission.
Mm-hmm.
Because in theory, you know, I could go into doing a ritual or, you know, a contemplation process or a grounding process with the goal being to calm myself down so that I no longer felt distress. But that's not what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to do is bank the fire of the distress sufficiently that I can use it as a power source and then make clear decisions about how I'm going to try to contribute in this time of chaos, and whether that's marching in protest myself, whether it's contributing to bail funds for people who get arrested as protesters, whether it's, you know, supporting Black Lives Matter efforts in any of a variety of ways, you know, whether it's writing a letter to the editor or, you know, writing an editorial or any of those kinds of things. What I want to do is, you know, get my shit together so that I can be effective in advancing those values that I care about. And so contemplative practices and, you know, smells and bells, lighting a candle, lighting some incense, you know, playing some kind of rhythmic but trancey music. All of those are things that I can do in my rituals with myself that will help me to move into that more powerful state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do.
Mm. Well, I know it's a practice which I've mentioned probably many times on this podcast together, but the idea of getting outside, out of the house into the rest of nature, not that our houses aren't also part of nature, but being a little bit more connected with the rest of the ecosystem around us, getting that sunlight, seeing the stars,
mm-hmm.
In terms of being able to come in terms of feeding ourselves, feeding myself at least, to be able to have the strength and the energy to be able to even think about or begin to affect any sort of change. So some of that self-care elements. Another thing that I find helpful in time periods where there is a lot of stress and big events like what has happened recently is to literally let myself shake, jump up and down, dance. You know, I'm not a particularly verbal person, but if someone was, maybe to shout or sing or growl or
rant.
Yeah, just let your body experience what's going on. I think that those can be really helpful in a safe environment, right? You might not want to go into your front yard if you're on a busy street with lots of people who are gonna, you know, then you'll have the cops called on you, right?
Right.
But
that guy's yelling at cars again.
Yeah. But in an environment where you feel able to let go a little bit, you know, in a bedroom or a bathroom or out on a hike or something like that. That's something that might have value.
I think that's a really good point, because we hold these sensations in our bodies, and we may think about the issues and feel the emotions with our minds, but the visceral bodily experience of you know, sense of injustice, sense of outrage, sense of anger, sense of sorrow and grief, all of those, they really live in our bodies. And so, you know, doing something that actually involves moving the body, I think, is very important. There's a lot of research coming out now about the vagus nerve and how shaking can be extreme. It will reset the anxiety point for a person. We see animals do this all the time. They will just shake themselves off if something happens that they don't like, and then they're okay.
We see toddlers do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then we train it out of them culturally, but you know, we start out doing that as people.
Right. Right. So I'm very interested in all that vagus nerve stuff. I think it's really fascinating. And it seems to indicate that, sure enough, we're animals, and you know, using animal solutions to, you know, internal problems is a pretty good way to go.
Yeah.
I wanted to say one other thing about doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was, you know, working a time and a half job on environmental activism, I never felt like what I did was enough. It never felt like enough. So I encourage people to be kind with themselves about what they're capable of doing, because so many people in this country don't lift a finger, or in the world, I should say. I mean, it's not just the United States. In the world, so many people don't lift a finger to make the world a better place or to stand up to what's wrong. And those who do really count. Mm. It really matters. And so I encourage people, even if all they can do is, you know, stand at a vigil with a candle or cast a ballot when the time comes. If that's the very maximum of what you're capable of doing, it still counts. It's still important. And I want everyone to know that that's the case.
Thank you. I had said that you had a poem that you wanted to share.
Yes, I wrote this last night when I was consumed with a lot of sorrow. So, as the tear gas wafts by, as the chaos mills, as our stomachs churn with sorrow and rage, as the forces of power do what forces of power do, as the disease presses down on us, as the national joke preens from the White House, as we struggle in our houses, as we struggle, somewhere out there, leaves are turning light to sugar. Suns are blazing hydrogen to helium. Somewhere, beauty is still happening, remote and strange as it may seem, and far away and long ago, somewhere people of all colors are sitting down to a meal together. How I long for that time, that place. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with another thrilling episode of The Wonder, Science-Based Paganism. I've been your host, Mark.
And I'm Yekka.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.